Finally, ladies and gentlemen, we, us together, have reached the last and final episode of season 1 of Greek Mythology, baby. Now, I know how much you love me, so don't worry, I'll be giving you a season 2, and that season 2 is gonna be very exciting because it's gonna be about Greek heroes. That includes Zeus's kids, but I'm not gonna give you any spoilers. I just did. What? Now, you know how much I talk, right? So, I'm not gonna bore you this time. We are moving on with the last and final episode of season 1 of Greek Mythology, baby. So, this is episode number 14? 13 something, you know? You just know, you got me, baby. What? That was cringe, sorry. Now, this is the last episode. Dionysus conquers the world with a refreshing beverage. Here goes nothing. A while back, there was this princess, Ismele. I'm sorry, no matter how I try to pronounce it, it just sounds like Smelly. So I'm not gonna even try anymore. We are calling her Smelly. Deal with it. So Smelly got vaporized while she was pregnant with Zeus's kid. Now, she got vaporized because Zeus showed her his real form as like in the godly form, because gods don't do that. Humans get vaporized because of the energy and the light they give off. So I'll tell you why he did that another time. So anyways, Zeus had to rescue the premature baby by sewing him into his right thigh. Weird, to keep him alive. Yeah, I know, just another boring day in the life of a god. Several months later, the baby was getting big and uncomfortable in Zeus's leg. So Zeus figured the baby was ready to be born. Zeus undid the stitches. Amazingly, the kid came out alive and healthy. Zeus wrapped him in a blanket, but he didn't know anything about raising babies, so he called Hermes. "Hey," Zeus said, "take this baby around to the mortal world. I think Smelly had a sister or something. Find her and ask her to raise this kid until he's older." "Sure, boss." Hermes took the baby and looked him over. "Is he a god or a demigod or what?" "Not sure yet," Zeus said. "We'll have to wait and see, but I don't want to be changing diapers in the meantime." "I hear ya. What's his name?" The kids started screaming and yelling. "For now," Zeus decided, "let's call him Bacchus." Hermes grinned. "The noisy one? Nice. One more thing. Hera will be looking for him. She hasn't been able to mess with the kid while he's been stuck in my thigh, but she'll notice the big lump is gone now." Yeah, that lump was kind of obvious. "Might be best if Bacchus's aunt raises him like a girl, for just for a while. Maybe that will throw Hera off the scent." Hermes frowned. He didn't see how raising the baby as a girl would help. Hera wasn't so easily fooled, but Hermes knew better than to argue with the boss. "Got it," he said. "Off I go." Hermes had no trouble finding the baby's aunt, Ion, and Uncle Artemis. Sounds like a disease. They agreed to raise Bacchus with their own children. And the boy grew up at a normal human rate, not super accelerated like a god. Everybody decided he must be a demigod. But that just made Zeus more fearful that Hera would try to rip the kid apart. As requested, Ion and whatever, and Artemis dressed Bacchus in girl's clothing just to keep his identity secret. The first few years of his life, Bacchus was very confused. He wasn't sure why his foster parents called him he in private and she in public. At first, he thought all kids were treated that way. Then, when he was 3 years old, Hera struck. Somehow, she discovered where the baby was living and she flew down from Olympus, intent on revenge. But by the time Zeus found out what was happening, he had only a few seconds to act. He managed to zap Bacchus into the form of a goat so that Hera won't notice him. But Bacchus's foster parents weren't so lucky. Hera spotted them and inflicted them with a violent form of madness. Uncle Artemis thought his eldest son, Lyrcos, I guess, you know, these are Greek, so cut me some slack, was a deer and killed him with a bow and arrow. And Eon thought their younger son, Millie Curtis, needed a hot bath, a really hot bath. So she drowned him in the basin of boiling water. Then Eon and Artemis realized what they had done. In despair, they both leaped off the side of a cliff and plummeted to their deaths. That Hera's all about wholesome family values, yes. Zeus managed to retrieve Bacchus and turn him back into a child, but the experience haunted Bacchus. He learned that madness could be used as a weapon. He learned that goats were good. In fact, guess what? The goats became one of his sacred animals. What a surprise. And he had learned that you couldn't hide who you were just by putting in different clothes. Later on, he became the god of anybody who felt confused about his or her own gender, because Dionysus could relate. Anyway, Zeus looked around for a new set of foster parents. Big shock, not many people volunteered after hearing what Hera had done to Ion and Artemis. Anyways, Zeus flee to Mount Nysa on the Greek mainland and convinced the nymphs there to raise Bacchus. Zeus promised to make them immortal if they did him this favor, and that was a hard deal to refuse. Young Bacchus became known as the godly son of Zeus who lives on Nysa, which got shortened to Dios, god, that is, of Nysa, which eventually became his new name, Dionysus. Or as some people call him, Dionysus, but there is no actual wrong pronunciation. Though he was still called Bacchus, the noisy one, especially after he ate beans or cabbage, which was way more than you wanted to know. Dionysus grew up on the Mount Nysa with the nymphs as his foster mothers and the satyrs as his foster fathers. Satyrs are pretty wild and chaotic, so it's no surprise Dionysus turned out a little out of the ordinary. Occasionally, he played with mortal kids with the nearby farms, and Dionysus became popular for his magic tricks with plants. He discovered early on that he could produce drinkable nectar by crushing any kind of plant, no matter what. Twigs, leaves, barks, roots, whatever. No problem. Fennel juice? Yum. The other kids would challenge him, like, "Bet you can make a drink out of the thorn bush." Dionysus would pick up a rock, smash out some branches, and golden sap would flow from the wounded plant. Dionysus would collect it in cups, mix some water, add miniature umbrellas, and voila! Ice thorn bush sweat for everyone. You know, I cannot hear myself talk, so I have no idea what I'm saying, so help me. An entertaining trick. But none of Dionysus' early recipes caught on. Fennel juice just wasn't that popular after all. Then one day, Dionysus was out in the woods with his best friend, a young satyr, a boy named Ampelis. Sounds like a toy for kids. It's Ampelos, my bad. They spotted a thick vine curled around the branch of an elm tree about 20 feet above their head. Dionysus froze in his tracks. "What is it?" Ampelos asked. "You know what? We're just calling him Amp from now on, because that's just easy." "That vine up there," Dionysus said. "What kind of a plant is that?" Amp frowned. The vine didn't look anything special to him. It was thick and bristly, with wide green leaves and no fruits or flowers that he could see. "Well, it's not ivy or honeysuckle. Don't know. Never seen it before. Come on." But Dionysus stood transfixed. There was something important about that plant, something that could change the world. "I have to get a closer look." Dionysus tried to scale the trunk of the elm, but he was a noisy climber. He fell on his butt in the leaves. Amp laughed. "If it's so important to you, I'll get it. Leave the climbing to the satyrs." Dionysus felt a sudden chill of dread. He didn't wanna Ampelis like going up there because like he also wanted the wine. "Be careful," he said. Amp rolled his eyes. "I've climbed higher trees than this." The young sailor clambered up the trunk and was soon straddling the elm branch. Easy peasy, he started pricing the vine from the branch, feeding the end down to Dionysus like a rope. Got it? Dionysus reached up and grabbed the vine. What happened next isn't clear. Maybe Dionysus pulled the vine too hard, maybe Amp reached down too low. Whatever the case was, Amp lost his balance and fell, tangled in the vine. 20 feet isn't so far, but it's enough. Amp hit his head on a rock with a sickening crack. Dionysus wailed in horror. He embraced his friend, but the young cedar's eyes were already dull and empty. He wasn't breathing. Sticky blood matted his hair and stained the leaves of the vine. Amp was dead. Dionysus sobbed. If he hadn't wanted the stupid vine, his friend would still be alive. His sadness mixed with anger. He glared at the satyr's blood on the green leaves. He snarled, "You will pay for this vine. You will bear the sweetest fruit to make up for his bitter loss. Bear fruit." The vine trembled. The body of Amp dissolved into the mist. The satyr's blood soaked into the plant, and clusters of small fruits popped up, ripening instantly to dark red. Dionysus had created the first grapevine. He wiped away his tears. He had to make his friend's death mean something. He would learn to use this new plant. The grapes looked so full of juice, so Dionysus picked several bunches. He carried them to a nearby creek bed and found two large flat stones. He crushed the grapes between the rocks, inventing the first wine press. Dionysus collected the juice in his drinking cup, which he always kept by his belt. He held the liquid in the sunlight and worked his magic, swishing the grape juice around until it fermented into something else, something new. He took a sip and his taste buds nearly exploded. "This," he said, "is good stuff." Dionysus called it wine. He made enough to fill his flask, then looked back wistfully one more time at the place where Amp had died. The grapevines were going crazy now, spreading all over the wood, blooming in vengeance and bearing more grapes. Dionysus nodded, satisfied. If he had his way, the whole world would be filled with grapevines in Amp's honor. He went back to the cave where he lived on Mount Nysa. He showed his discovery to one of his foster moms, a nymph named Ambrosia. Yes, she was named after the godly food. I don't know why. At least it's better than cookie or snickerdoodle. Ambrosia took a sip of wine. Her eyes widened. "This is delicious. Where's Amp?" "Oh," Dionysus hung his head. "He died, falling from a tree." "That's terrible." Ambrosia took another sip, "but this is good stuff." Soon she was sharing wine with all her nymph friends. The satyrs came by seeing what the giggling was about. Pretty soon the whole mountain was just one giant party, with dancing and singing and tiki torches and lots of wine. Dionysus kept making the stuff and passing it around. He couldn't keep up with the demand. Finally, he taught the satyrs and nymphs how to make it themselves. And by the end of the night, everyone on the mountain was an expert winemaker. The satyrs quickly discovered that if they drank too much wine, they got drunk. They couldn't think straight, see straight, or walk straight. For some reason, they found this hilarious. So they kept on drinking. The old satyr, Silenos, threw his arm around Dionysus' shoulder. "You, sir, are a god." "No, I mean that the god of..." "What's this stuff called again?" "Vine," said Dionysus. "God of vine, Silenus just..." "You know what? We're gonna call him Slime. I don't know why. We are just are gonna do that." "God of vine." Slime hiccuped. "God anymore?" "Now, kids, this is another good time to remind you that vine is for grown-ups. It tastes horrible and could seriously mess up your life." "Yes, I was not promoting. I was just trying to be a good role model in my defense." So, still, the nymphs and satyrs were so impressed with Dionysus that they decided he must really be a god. His invention was just that amazing. Maybe you're thinking, okay, it's wine, big deal. How does that fade making Dionysus a god? If I invented tuna salad, would I be a god too? But wine was a major breakthrough in beverage technology. Sure, people drank water, but water could kill you. Especially in cities, it was full of bacteria and other people's garbage. And well, I'm not really going into that. Let's just say water was gross. Nobody had invented canned sodas or even tea or coffee, so you were pretty much stuck with water or milk. Even with milk, you had to drink quickly before it spoiled, since there were no refrigerators. Then Dionysus came along and invented wine. It didn't go bad as long as you kept it bottled up. Sometimes it even tasted better if you let it sit for a few years. You could water it down so it wasn't as strong, but the alcohol would still kill germs and stuff. So it was safer to drink than regular water. You could even adjust the taste and make it sweeter with honey or vary the flavor by using different kinds of grapes. Basically, it was a super beverage of ancient Greece, or the super beverage of ancient Greece. Not only that, but if you drank a little, it would mellow you out. If you drank a lot, it would make you giddy and crazy. Some people even thought they had visions of God if they chugged enough wine. Word spread quickly about the new drink. Nymphs and satyrs from Mount Nysa traveled to countryside, telling anyone who would listen about the awesomeness of wine and the god who made it, Dionysus. They set up tasting booths on the side of the road. They offered starter kits, including the potted grape wine, an instruction manual for making wine press, and access to toll-free customer service hotline. Dionysus became famous. Even regular mortals began to gather on Mount Nysa every night for an ultimate party. Sure, they drank too much and got wild, but it wasn't just for fun. The followers of Dionysus considered themselves religious people. They called themselves Bacchae, or Bacchae, the groupies of Bacchus. And partying was their way of going to church. They believed it brought them closer to all the gods, because Dionysus was destined to be the 12th Olympian. How did Dionysus feel about that? A little nervous, he was still young and insecure. He wasn't sure if he was truly a god or not. On the other hand, he was happy to see people enjoying his new beverage. By spreading the knowledge of wine, he figured he was doing something good for the world, which made him feel better about all pain he had been through. His mom dying before he was born, Hera driving his foster parents crazy, and of course his best friend Amp dying in the woods. Then one day, his followers gathered around him and pitched an idea. "We need to go mainstream," explained one of the satyrs. "We should go to the nearest major city and get the king on our side. You can offer to become their patron king or god. They'll build your temple and your fame will spread even faster." The nearest king was a dude named Lycurgus, who ran a seaside town at the end or the base of the Mount Nysa. The satyrs suggested they start there to support local business and all. Dionysus wasn't sure he was ready for prime time, but his followers were enthusiastic. They wouldn't take no for an answer. "It's a great idea," they promised him. As Dionysus soon found out, it was a terrible idea. Now I'll give you a hint, it's because Lycurgus was all kinds of evil. We are not going to go into that because I'm ending the episode here. I leave that up to your imagination to think what he did with whom. So this is it, people. This is the end of season 1 and my throat hurts, so I'm going to stop now. So thank you so much for listening, and we are so close to 10K. I am super excited. Thank you, and see you in season. God, I just ruined my promotion. See you in season 2.